This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. I'm Craig Wallabake in one final time for Doug Faulkner. We'll be back with you on Monday. Making news on the show today, Western Canadian canola production is taking a big hit this year. We're finding out about how much from Errol Anderson. He's an analyst with Pro Market Communications in Calgary. Also on the show, grain markets are moving up this week. We'll be hearing from PI Financial Commodities Future Advisor Adam Piccolo on that. Also on the show, a poor canola crop usually means below normal honey production. Bees get nectar from many flowers, but in Saskatchewan, canola is important. We'll be hearing from Jeff Wilson, Saskatchewan's Provincial Apicultural Specialist, a little later on in the show. But first, it is the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And it's a presentation of Schomper Heat Cup, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, we had a little cloud cover this morning. It is sunshine right now. With the cloud and the heat, can we look at the possibility of thunderstorms popping up?
Yeah, the chances are there this afternoon, and really the next couple of days are all the same in that there is going to be some cloud cover that rolls in during the night. We've got the pretty dry air in place, but it's not completely dry. There is some moisture. I mean, there's always some moisture, but there's noticeable moisture, humidity running in the 40% range. So as the temperature backs down, we get the air a little more saturated and some of the instability in the air. And there's a lot of weather features that are actually in play. They're not really directly impacting us, but there's a lot. There's a warm front pushing through the northern plains of the U.S. There's a cold front dropping through Saskatchewan. They're out there. They just don't have much to work with. So as the temperature backs down a little, we get a little more humidity, a little more potential for these clouds. It's sort of the opposite of a summer type thunderstorm where you get the daytime heating fueling it. You're getting the evening cooling fueling it more than anything. The end result, though, is we don't get a lot falling from these clouds. There's going to be cloud coverage the next few nights. A chance of showers up to as high as 30% tonight, but still, mostly these are going to be light showers. Overall, it's just the continued heat warning in effect. Temperature around 35 this afternoon, the Humidex 38 at peak. There are still some areas of smoke around. We'll be in and out of that over the next couple of days as well. Those spotty showers tonight, mainly evening, low 18. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny with a high of 32. Again, the Humidex up there, 36. And Sunday, mostly sunny. A chance of a shower or thunderstorm late in the day. Toward evening, it's our best chance. The high 33. Sunday looks to be actually pretty humid. Even with the lower 30s, Humidex climbing into the upper 30s for the afternoon. The heat continues. It's in the 30s Monday. We may get a break Tuesday. Still thinking 31, so not much of a break. The break won't last too much longer. Any dip we see Tuesday and maybe Wednesday will be gone as we climb right back into the 30s by Thursday, and again, if not Wednesday.
Taking a look at conditions around the region, the Paw 25, Swan River 30, Dauphin 31, Brandon 28, Shoal Lake Russell 26, Roblin, Regina 28, Saskatoon 25, Hudson Bay 27, Broadview, Mooseman 30, Indian Head 29, Wynyard, Wadena, Covington 26. In Yorkton, Melville, sunny, the wind south at 9, humidity at 43%, it's 29 degrees. Well, yesterday in Yorkton, we had a high of 32 degrees, the overnight low dipped down to a 14. There was no precipitation in the past 24 hours. Normally at this time of year, we have a high of 24 and the overnight low 12. Sun rose at 4:53 this morning, and the sun will set at 8:59 this evening. In Manitoba yesterday, the hot spot was the Paw at 32.7 degrees. The cold spot in Manitoba, 9. They were shared at Gimli and at Sprague. In Saskatchewan, the hot spot was 36 degrees at Lucky Lake, and the cold spot was 10. And that was at Mankota. And that's the agri-weather. GX on Agriculture will continue after that. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Western Canadian canola production is going to take a big hit this year. The question is, how much? Errol Anderson is an analyst with Pro Market Communications in Calgary.
You know, it's really caught the global attention on what's occurring in Western Canada and the northern U.S. This drought and the amount of heat that has come with these prolonged systems are certainly going to diminish the yields. You know, we, for instance, on the canola yields that were, you know, thought to be around potentially producing a crop of about 20 million metric tons, that won't even be close. You know, we believe it could be down to closer to 15. So though it's caught the attention of the markets, we will certainly be well supported on these grain prices. In fact, these prices over the past week have moved higher as the systems are still in place. So yes, it's a weather market that's likely going to hold right into September.
Anderson says even if there was a thunderstorm or two, the moisture might not help the crop in the driest areas.
Well, it depends where you are on the prairies. You know, if we got a good rain here in the next few days, it would certainly help some crops. But there's also some crops that will not be savable. But certainly when you get into Saskatchewan, you know, you've got some real dire situations. But again, if we got the rain, you know, what we thought was a 15-bushel canola crop might turn out to be a 30-bushel canola crop. So there's still a chance, but we do have to get that moisture quickly.
Anderson says while the November canola contract has been moving higher in reaction to the drought, there'll be no shortage in global vegetable oil markets in the coming year.
This market is really volatile, and the global vegetable oil market is not quite in the same pace as canola. We're seeing a rise, actually, in global vegetable oil production, that suggests that the demand for export demand for canola in the new crop year, I believe, will be down. So we're going to see a smaller crop in Canada, but we're going to see smaller demand, in my view. So most of the canola, I believe, is going to head into the domestic market. But with that said, the November contract, in my view, is got a window right now of about $850 as a low and $1,000 as a high. So this is an incredible range that I've never seen in my career.
Anderson also says with the cattle market and the impact the drought as well as food and water are also concerns that he's having.
Prices, you know, they were above a dollar per pound. Now they're down to about 90 cents. And in my belief, I think the cow market will gradually move down possibly to about 80 cents per pound as we head into early fall market. Looking at the fat market, we've sort of got the dog days of summer when it comes to beef demand, and this is seasonal, but we saw the fat cattle market here in Alberta peak out at about $1.65 per pound. We're down to about $1.55 right now. My thought is that going into that late summer, early fall market, I wouldn't be surprised to see the fats here in Alberta move down into that $1.35 to $1.40 per pound range.
Carol Anderson is an analyst with Pro Market Communication in Calgary. The grain markets were moving up this week. PI Financial Commodity Future Advisor Adam Piccolo says canola futures rose $64 a ton. Wheat was up about a dollar per bushel.
On the canola front here this week, November canola up approximately $64 a ton. We actually reached a new contract high on Tuesday for the November futures at about $949 a ton. So still very positive trends there. On the Minneapolis wheat front, on the September contract, up a dollar a bushel just in this week. So today alone, we are up approximately 27 cents a bushel. Again, putting in new contract highs here. And I was looking back actually on a 20-year chart, and this level has not really been seen since 2013. And, you know, at $10 a bushel might be in sight if really all of the factors kind of stay the way that they are.
Well, what are the factors behind it?
Well, starting off on the wheat front, and again, it's similar to canola too, but the weather is really still very threatening and could keep sparking more of a continued uptrend on the spring wheat areas. Funds could easily keep staying in this market. And again, wheat, Minneapolis wheat is considered a smaller wheat market than maybe Chicago and Kansas. But again, continuing, you know, deteriorating crop conditions in both the U.S. and Canada over the next 2 weeks is really the main driver here right now. And on the canola front here, similar story, definitely in our crop here in Canada. And what I'm watching as well too is just there is some rains that are coming through some parts in the States, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, northern Ohio, but the Dakotas are missing out on that. And, you know, soil moisture has been, you know, dropping even more so. And just looking at, again, the continued forecast further out, it is supposed to be very warm. And as kind of more of that unfolds, it'll be interesting to see how canola is affected possibly by the soy complex and vice versa. Soybean oil is looking like it wants to go back to contract highs and through that there. So that will be potentially supportive for canola through harvest. But I know probably many listeners here, their crops might not look the way that they want them to. And that's, you know, I've been talking to clients about, you know, what strategies could be done there to maybe put some extra in clients' pockets this year.
Well, what is the outlook for next week and beyond?
Well, again, the forecast is still very dry, and that's going to continue, you know, this trend here. Now, for Minneapolis wheat to have a down day of, you know, 25 or more cents isn't out of the question. However, you know, right now the trend is still up, and, you know, one thing that I say to clients is the trend is your friend, but don't fall in love with the trend. So that's one thing to keep in mind.
Adam Percalo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial. It's now 12:30 in Saskatchewan, 1:30 in Manitoba. That means it's time for the AgriView portion of our show, and it's a presentation of People's Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX94, AgriView.
Prairie crops are burning to a crisp under an intense summer heat wave, which continued to bake Western Canadian crops this past week. It's also putting a pinch on the financial situation some farmers will face this year, as yield and income prospects dwindle quickly, and the full impact of a looming feed shortage comes into greater focus for cattle producers. Across the West, grain and oilseed producers anticipating an early and light harvest this year, with crops in many areas already well past the point where they would be a benefit from rain. In large areas of western and southern Saskatchewan, yields will be below normal, and in some cases close to zero. For some, canola crops are a complete write-off, and annual cereals will be coming out before the end of the month, with yields estimates in the 5 to 10 bushel range. In the hardest-hit areas, grain growers are already beginning to salvage annual crops for animal feed. Crop development is estimated at 2 to 3 weeks ahead of normal as drought-stressed plants race toward the finish line. Even in the parkland areas of Saskatchewan and Alberta, where moisture reserves entering the growing season were considerably better, crops are going backward quickly. Livestock producers, meanwhile, scrutinizing animal numbers and keeping a close eye on markets, wondering when to begin culling their herd before the feeding season arrives. Hay fields and pastures in Manitoba's Interlake among many withering under the drought, and that's extremely bad news for our cattle producers. Ranchers in the Interlake were still struggling to recover from critically dry conditions in 2019 when this year hit, and now conditions are bad enough that producers are selling cattle in July. It's just one example of the many to emerge from the Interlake region in the past several years. Here's that local officials and industry warn may bring some cattle operations to the point of no return. Many farms in the area have had no chance to recover from 2019, a year when dry conditions came to a head. Widespread feed shortages were reported across the province. In Interlake, pasture supplies dried out, hay yielded little, and cattle were moved off the land early. Producers scrambled to bring in feed or cull deeply into their herds, while the poor conditions were later linked to higher open rates in the Interlake, further cutting into farm production. At least five Interlake municipalities have also announced a state of agriculture disaster as of July 9th, including the municipalities of West Interlake, St. Laurent, Coldwell, Grahamdale, and Bifrost-Riverton. Officials say some other surrounding municipalities have also said the issue is tabled for the next council meetings, and the list may grow. For the mid-sized beef farmer, the producer under 200 head, experts and officials now worry this year may be the last straw. And Tyler Fulton with the Manitoba Beef Producers suggested that while established producers may be able to absorb more of the shock, conditions may be dire for new ranchers without established equity and those who are being forced to sell their cattle. Canada's federal agriculture minister says the government is ready to receive formal submissions from provinces for agri-recovery plans to help prairie farmers and ranchers against the drought. Marie-Claude Bibeau, summarizing discussions from Thursday's online meeting with provincial and territorial ag ministers, said the formal requests are needed to trigger the process as both levels of government contribute. Agri-Recovery is the brand name for the disaster relief framework deployed on an as-needed basis during natural disasters to help farmers with extraordinary costs. Agri-Recovery programs, cost-shared by the federal and provincial governments, are launched in situations where producers don't have the capacity to cover the extraordinary cost, even with the assistance available from other programs. During their meeting, the government said in the release, ministers expressed their concern for farmers and workers dealing with the current heat waves, wildfire, and drought conditions across Western Canada and other regions. Bibeau's Saskatchewan counterpart, David Merritt, for one, put his request in writing Thursday for an agri-recovery assessment for the province so as to determine the program requirements. His letter CC'd his counterparts in the four Western provinces and also in Ontario. And Corteva Agriscience and Andermatt USA have announced a multi-year agreement for two technologies which will benefit U.S. farmers. Andermatt USA is the U.S. subsidiary of Andermatt Biocontrol AG, global pioneers in producing microbiological products for biological pest control. As part of the agreement, Corteva receives an exclusive license to a bioinsecticide based on the naturally occurring insecticidal virus, Helicopora. The active ingredients target larvae of African cotton bollworm, cotton earworm, and other species. The unique technology allows efficient and sustainable control of the pests, which damage crops, including soybeans, cotton, sorghum, and corn. Corteva also receives an exclusive license to a biofungicide, which will help provide the disease-inhibiting protective shields around plants. Corteva will offer these technologies through their own brands in the U.S., markets under the names of Herkin Bioinsecticide and Bexfond Bioinsecticide, respectively. That is the AgriView portion of our show. We'll be back in a moment.
It's Formula One, Sclerotinia Zero. Ask for Solitil at your local Adama retailer.
Well, checking the latest conditions in Yorkton, Melville, sunshine. The wind south at 9, humidity at 43%. Right now, it is 29 degrees. A poor canola crop usually means below normal honey production. Bees get nectar from many flowers and crops, but in Saskatchewan, canola is extremely important. Jeff Wilson is Saskatchewan's provincial apiculture specialist, and we've been under hot, dry conditions for some time now. How has that affected hives?
The heat itself hasn't really affected the honeybees. It's affected the canola, and basically the bees require good, healthy canola to make nectar, so that way they can get the surplus and make the honey.
Or do bees have to travel farther to get that nectar?
They'll go as close as the best honey source is, the best nectar source. So if there's good nectar close by, they will stick close by. If the pickings aren't good very close, they will go further. And they'll go easily out 2 miles, so 3 kilometers kind of range.
You've talked about canola being the most important crop, but what others do bees go after? And how are they doing?
Well, they really like the clovers and alfalfas. Depending on where you are in the province, some areas were reporting that they're getting a good alfalfa clover kind of flow, and others it wasn't quite as good, probably in part depending on moisture. But those crops seem to have deeper roots, so they can still make honey for the bees even when it's a bit drier.
And winter kill, did a lot of bees survive this past winter?
Across the province, we had a very good winter mortality numbers. We did have some exceptions. Some beekeepers did have some higher than wanted mortality, but we came in about 14% loss over the winter, which is our best in years. So really good winter for the bees.
What would those losses be attributed to?
If it's an old queen, she might not have the resources or the ability to head the colony through the winter. So the queen is old and tired, basically. So it could be a queen thing. Sometimes it's a disease thing. Mostly the diseases were under control last year, so that didn't crop up too much. And this year, the weather was good, so that wasn't really a factor. And the disease of concern this past year, there's a little bit of Nosema, which is a gut parasite, which makes the bees poop all winter. That affected some beekeepers, and of course our worst one is varroa mites, and that affected a few other beekeepers.
Now, is this the busiest time for beekeepers, or will it get busier a little later on?
And as soon as they start pulling honey, so from what I'm hearing, they're just starting to pull some honey in the very south end of the province, and our more northern beekeepers will be starting here right away. As soon as they start making the honey, pulling in the honey from the bees, it will be ridiculously busy for the beekeepers.
How long does that usually happen? Into August or even September?
Most of the honey is produced between right now and mid-August. Some beekeepers just finished pulling off in September. Others are done mid-August. So it depends a bit on the flowers and a bit on the secondary flow. If we get some rain, sometimes the alfalfa will bloom again and make some more nectar, and the bees will go back to work. But unless we get some rain, that's not looking likely this year.
So it's too early to say production will be lower if we do get some rain?
You never know with bees. The populations of bees are out there, so they, as long as there are some flowers for them, they can do a good job even with a little bit limited resources. But you never really know. Rain would really help a lot.
And canola is the most important crop?
Absolutely. Probably 85% of the honey produced in this province is from canola.
Jeff Wilson is Saskatchewan's provincial apiculture specialist based in Prince Albert.
Livestock market conditions.
August live cattle were trading at 120.17, down 95. October live cattle at 125.60, down 92. August feeder cattle were at 155.62, down $1.75. September feeder cattle at 158.50, down 72. August lean hogs at 105.65. That's 105.65. That's up $1.35. And October lean hogs at 90.75, also up $1.35. And that is your livestock quotes. Back in a moment. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Quig Wolebeck. Yorkton Regional 4-H Show and Sell was held earlier this month, and due to COVID restrictions in Yorkton, it was based in Melville. And for possibly the first time ever, two sisters won. The John Simpson Memorial to Best Overall Female went to Trinity Barris with her purebred Simmental 3-year-old female with twin heifer calves. She says a lot went into getting them ready.
Lots of hard work and just keeping them quiet and the hair on them and feeding them and just trying to get them ready for the shows and teach them what it's about a little bit at home.
What is the next step?
I will continue in 4-H. I might take my cow to agribition this year with her twins. But I will wait and see how that plays out.
She also had the reserve champion market steer, which was sold to Yorkton Auction Center. Not to be outdone, her sister Cassidy had the champion yearling female with her purebred Simmental. Like her sister, Cassidy said a lot of work went into that entry.
All winter. It's sometimes hard to go outside in the cold, but you gotta get used to it.
Just sort of work went into getting them ready.
Feeding them when it's cold, making sure that they've got enough hair, and making sure that they don't rub out all of their hair.
Cassidy also had the Grand Champion Market Steer, which sold at Whitewood Livestock Sales. Reserve Champion Yearling Female was Caden Mitchelson with his Purebred Angus Female. A newly formed treaty land sharing network has been launched at a farm near Blackworth. It's about 160 kilometers northwest of Regina. The farm of Mary Smiley in Ian McCrary will allow First Nation visitors to gather plants and medicines, hunt, hold ceremonies, and other uses. Mary says about 20 farmers have joined the Treaty Land Sharing Network.
Well, it's really, conceptually, it's a very simple idea around some very complex issues. So what farmers and ranchers that sign up with the Treaty Land Sharing Network and agree to the principles are really saying is that they want to do the crucial work of honoring treaties. And so what I've come to understand is that our treaty relationship when it comes to land is really a relationship of mutual recognition, mutual respect, and shared responsibility. And it is the opportunity for farmers to both farm their land and earn a livelihood from it, and maintain, and for Indigenous people to access the land. So that's really what treaties had in mind on the start, was full sharing of the land and mutual respect for the different uses that people would have.
Members who do sign up will be given signs to post on their land.
Fortunately, we got some funding from the United Church of Canada to produce these very lovely signs, and the signs are very important. The Indigenous land users that have engaged with us so far have said that, you know, we need the signs to feel safe to access people's land. So the signs are simple, of welcoming Indigenous land users, and the Treaty Land Sharing Network website is posted there, which is treatylandsharingnetwork.ca. And on that website, people who want to share their land can sign up against the principles that we have in mind, and Indigenous land users can also find the land that is part of the Treaty Land Sharing Network.
She says there are some important reasons First Nations people need to access farmland.
Indigenous ways of living involve access to natural spaces, and those natural spaces over time have become more and more curtailed by a whole bunch of decisions by us settlers. And so it really diminishes their opportunity to practice their ways of life, and their and the treaties, as intended, were really supposed to be about sharing. And once I realized that they're about sharing, you go, wow, you know, I can do that. And to date, I've only had a really good experience. Ian and I have only had really good experiences with our involvement so far.
This enables First Nations people to do exactly what on your land?
Pick berries, gather medicinal plants, hunt, gather sacred rocks for sweats, and hold ceremony. Those are the inherent rights that were baked into the treaty relationship.
Well, some livestock producers may worry about their cattle being accidentally shot. How did you manage to resolve that issue?
As farmers, we've had that concern for a long time before we've even entered into opportunities of inviting Indigenous people to come join us. So that's not unique to any one group of people. What happens within this one is that we invite Indigenous land users to phone us. Our phone number will be on the sign. And we want to do that to make sure that it's a safe space for them to practice their inherent Indigenous rights. So, for example, we have a piece of land that had an acreage carved out in the middle of it. We put up an electric wire. The fellow who lived on that in that property, he nearly decapitated himself because he hadn't realized that he knew we put up the electric wire, but he kind of forgot about it. And so, you know, it was just we just want to ensure safety. And I think the best way to do that is to have our phone number available. The other thing that's really neat, or you maybe not understood by your listeners, is that this is foot access only. So any concerns that we might have about noxious weeds coming on truck tires or quad tires doesn't need to enter into the conversation here. It's foot traffic.
Husband and wife Mary Smiley and Ian McCrary opening their farm at Bladworth to a newly formed treaty land sharing network.
Commodities update.
Canola closed up across the board today. November canola trading at their closing at $9.1750, up $5.40. January canola at $8.99.40, up $1.80. September Minneapolis wheat at $9.17 1/4, up 23 1/4. September Kansas City wheat at $6.51 1/2, up 11 1/4. September Chicago wheat at $6.92 1/2, up 20 1/2. September corn at $5.56 even, down 8 1/4. August soybeans at $14.54 3/4, up 7 1/4. And oats for September at $4.36 even, down 3 1/2. And those are today's commodity prices. Back in a moment. We're back on GX on Agriculture. The Livestock and Forage Center of Excellence near Clavitt will be holding its second annual Summer Field Day. That's coming up next Tuesday, July 20th. Scott Wright is director with the LFCE.
It's a real opportunity for us to engage directly with producers and folks with an interest in that livestock industry. What we're looking to get out of it is the interface and interaction between people, the opportunity for them to be giving us input in terms of the work that's being done, and the opportunity to share the information that our researchers have been doing.
Is a lot of the research designed directly for what's happening on cow-calf operations?
The research is designed directly for carrying from the cow-calf all the way through to the feedlot process. So at LFCE, we've actually got the opportunity within our facilities to connect from the genetic side, the calf on the ground, the cow-calf management, and through the forage world, right up to the feedlot management.
The morning kicks off with a panel session involving market analyst Ann Wasco and Cynthia Beck, a clinical psychology graduate student from the U of R.
We're pretty pleased with the folks that have been interested in coming to talk with us. With market analyst, with analyst Wasco, who is no stranger to most people. And then on the side of touching on sort of the mental health around the farm, the stress that things like COVID and drought are bringing us, and the opportunity for a little resilience and wellness around that. And then we'll touch on how some of these concerns, both COVID and drought, have affected the research.
And there's one last speaker before the midday break.
We also have Greg Adams joining us to talk a little bit about the future of genetics and the livestock industry. And that'll carry us on into lunch. Those are outside in an open-air tent to try and give people a little more room to interact and a little more safety around our COVID challenges. From there, we're going out to see three different locations. We'll see the forage cow-calf unit. There we're looking at some water quality challenges. Dr. Greg Penner and his graduate students will take us there. We'll look at the feedlot itself, and from there we're looking at some of the stocking density, bunk size, the interaction of animals in the space they've got available. We'll look at some things like dietary flavors, which stimulate intake and health on those cattle coming into the feedlot, and a little bit of time around ergot, one of the challenges that we see in grain significantly. And then finally, we've got the pasture-based work. Bart Larger is his grad students, and that'll be taking us around yield quality performance and some of the greenhouse gas emissions conversations even around forage varieties, both annual and perennials.
The Livestock and Forage Center of Excellence Field Day runs next Tuesday, July 20th, about 20 minutes southeast of Saskatoon. An economist with Partners for Production Agriculture says a court-ordered rollback of U.S. pork harvesting facility line speeds will force the construction of new processing plants rather than allow increased capacity through improved efficiency. The Joe Biden administration has until the end of August to appeal a federal court ruling striking down pork harvest facility line speeds allowed under the USDA's new swine inspection system. Dr. Steve Myers, an economist with Partners for Production and Agriculture, and explains what it means.
It had been running at higher chain speeds in the U.S. allowed by the NSIS. Four of those were part of a almost 20-year pilot project that had been, and they'd been doing it for a long time. The fifth one in Guymon, Oklahoma, had just speeded up their lines in the last 2 years. It took those plants and stepped them back from anywhere from 1250 to 1350 an hour back to 1106 per hour, which was the old regulation on chain speeds. If we look at that in total, it cost us about 2.5% of our slaughter capacity in the United States, or about 85,000 head per week. And the danger there, of course, is if you get hog numbers that are high, you might run into that slaughter capacity constraint. As of last summer, we had about 2.768 million head per week on a 5.4 workday week, which is kind of the standard one that I computed on. This would have taken us back to about 2.683 million head. And based on the March Hodgson pitch report, we were at some risk of running, you know, running into that slaughter capacity constraint. The June Hodgson pitch report, with its 3% lower March-May pig crop, had pulled those numbers back. And so I don't think there's an immediate threat to the capacity situation of running into capacity, even with these lower chain speeds. But longer term, obviously, you know, that takes away some capacity. But and it's pretty easy to capacity to add if you play by the rules and do the things that USDA found during the long pilot project. So still troubling, even though, given the projected smaller fourth quarter slaughter, I don't think it's going to be a big problem this year.
Well, what exactly is being requested?
The first request is for USDA to go and appeal the decision. Now, the thing that people have to remember is the decision by the judge in Minnesota had nothing to do directly with worker health and safety. The decision was that USDA did not follow the proper procedures for promulgating a final rule about the new swine inspection system. And from everything I can tell, the judge was right. They didn't follow the right procedures. They didn't comment. They didn't address some comments that they received back on this chain speed issue. And so USDA has to decide whether to go appeal it. They got to do that by the end of August. The problem is, you know, the judge may be right. And so an appeal may be, you know, kind of a fruitless effort. The other alternative is for USDA to go back to the drawing board and try to promulgate these rules again and do it right this time. The problem there is they're going to almost certainly draw the ire of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which has opposed this change in chain speed all along. And the Biden administration is far more beholden to organized labor in the United States than certainly the Trump administration was, and maybe any administration we've seen in many, many years. So I'm afraid that kind of any way you cut it, USDA may not go back and revisit this issue. And so we will just have some capacity that we could have, we could put into play and we could utilize, that just won't be tapped because of this regulation limiting chain speeds.
What does this mean for other jurisdictions and more specifically Canada?
Well, there are a couple of plants that were involved in this higher chain speed. They're kind of far northwest plants, one in Minnesota, one in northeast Nebraska. And so, you know, their need for the marginal pig is down. And so there could be some implications on how many pigs are demanded out of Canada. The same is true of Coldwater, Michigan, which could be in a position to bring some pigs in from Ontario. So I would classify most of those pigs, the market hogs coming from Canada, as kind of marginal pigs. And this certainly reduces the demand for those pigs and takes away an alternative that Canadian producers could have tapped into. And it, you know, it sets a precedent for the future that says, well, you know, to get more capacity, you may have to build a plant. You can't speed up the plants you have. And as I look at it, you know, the easiest way to add capacity is to run the plants we have a little harder. And so that becomes a more binding constraint in the future.
Dr. Steve Meyer is an economist with Partners for Production Agriculture. Coming up on at 12:59 in Saskatchewan, 1:59 in Manitoba, we'll have our check of the GX94 news and sports headlines in just a moment. But first, a final check of the GX94 farm weather for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Moosomin, and Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions. A heat warning is in effect for this afternoon. Sunshine, 20% chance of an evening thunderstorm, south-southwest wind 10 to 20, a high today of 35. Partly cloudy tonight, a 30% chance of a spotty shower. East-northeast wind at 15 to 25 and the overnight low 18. Partly to mostly sunny tomorrow. South-southeast wind 10 to 20, a high of 32. For Sunday, mostly sunny, still a 20% chance of a late-day shower. South wind at 10 to 20, the high 33. Sunshine 32 degrees on Monday. Tuesday, sunny with increasing afternoon cloud, continuing hot with a high of 31. Around the region, the Paw 25, Swan River at 30, Dauphin 31, Brandon 28, Shoal Lake Russell 26, Robin and Regina 28, Saskatoon 25, Hudson Bay 27, Broadview Mooseman 30, Indian Head 29, Wynyard Wadena Covington 26. In Yorkton Melville, sunny, the wind south at 9, humidity at 43%, it's 29 degrees. And that's it for today's GXN Agriculture. Doug Faulkner will be back with you Monday at 12:15 in Saskatchewan, 1:15 in Manitoba.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.